Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You know, these long West Coast trips to call games have given me the gift of time. Time to put on some headphones and listen to my favorite audio titles on Audible. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. From bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. Now, I personally love a good murder mystery, and I'm currently listening to An Honest Man by Michael Corrida. It's about murders on a yacht. What more do I need to say? As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. That's audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Shout out to the old friend who instilled a fear of manta rays in you that you can't shake. And I'd like to shout out my brother-in-law who constantly cash apps me the most ridiculous sums of money, $11.42 for a bagel and cream cheese that I bought him. He doesn't need to do that,
Kylie,
but he does.
This. Kylie loves this shout out. We also should shout out your new friend who recently started working in real estate and now says location, location, location all the time. Shout out to the friend who withholds repayment until you finally agree that who's the greatest of all time?
It's got to be Leo, right?
We can do Leo for now. I think Leo works. And to the friend who can't dance, shout out to the friend who sends GIF reactions entirely too much for anyone's taste, JJ. And to the friend who thinks you're related. And to the friend who drew their cat on their custom cash card, shout out to you, sir.
I am a giffer. Cash App is the easy way for you and all your friends to enjoy sending, spending, saving, investing, splitting, tipping, donating, gifting, or just pressing buttons to look busy, all with the number one finance app in the App Store. That's money. That's Cash App. Download Cash App from the App Store or Google Play Store today to create your own cash tag.
Welcome to The Old Man and the Three with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 134, Bones Highland. Tommy, you're joining me via Zoom. I believe you're on the West Coast right now. It's good to see you so early in the morning. This interview, this conversation with Bones certainly was a lot of fun. Fun is a great way to describe him. There's something that's joyful, playful, entertaining about the way he plays basketball. And there was something very joyful and fun and entertaining about how he approached this conversation.
I think there's something fun, joyful, entertaining about the way that he approaches life. And he talks about that a little bit with us, but you guys will see, we didn't do this in person. We did it on a Zoom. He's smiling the entire time. Even when we get to some really, really heavy stuff, he's in such a great, headspace, and it's really a kind of inspiring to see.
Yeah, we get into the story, but he was involved in a tragic fire when he was in high school. He survived because he jumped out of a second story window, tore his patellar tendon in the process. He gets into that story. We touch on a bunch of hoop stuff, his background, where he thinks he's excelling, where he thinks he can improve in the NBA. And we had a great conversation about Jokic and what makes him so special. And it was cool to see the vantage point of a teammate and specifically a young guy coming in to be a teammate with someone who was already an MVP.
Yeah. I don't want to step on the Joker story that you tell on the show. So I think we're going to get to it there, but he's just a fascinating guy. It's a fascinating guy. And Bones seems to understand why us as NBA fans, you know, are so interested in and they're so kind of just curious about how he lives his life, so to speak.
The good thing about The Old Man of the Three is that we get to have people on our show that we're fascinated by, that we appreciate, that we are fans of. Bones is no different. Our video guy, head of content, I should say, our guy, Jason Gallagher, is a big Bones fan. So this was a real treat for all of us. You know, Tommy, we were supposed to have a double episode this week. We were going to have two guests. Desmond Bain was going to jump on with us as well for a quick check-in. They announced yesterday that he's got a toe sprain and will be out 2 to 3 weeks. So we let him off the hook. He'll be back soon, yeah, when he's healthy and back in the lineup. But we're looking forward to catching up with Desmond soon. And we, you know, when we've touched on Desmond a little bit on the show, and I got a chance to talk about Desmond a bunch last week on NBA Countdown prior to the Grizzlies Timberwolves game. And I think he had a solid argument for most improved player last year. And I think he has another solid argument for most improved player this year. Right now, he's tied for the 4th best odds in the most improved player market on DraftKings. And he's sort of bunched together when we talk about odds. He's sort of bunched together with our guy Tyrese Halliburton, Lauri Markkanen, and Tyrese Maxey. And when I look at those four guys specifically, like, those are all young guys that are making jumps in their career. And yeah, Maxey, you know, his counting numbers are great. The volume is up. The efficiency numbers are down. But when you look at Desmond Bane, Lauri Markkanen, and Tyrese Halliburton, their volume and efficiency has increased. And specifically with Bane, the really surprising thing to me is his playmaking ability, Tommy. He's averaging a career high in assists, 4.7 assists per game. That's a big leap to me.
Do you want to talk about the front runner on DraftKings right now for this award?
Of course, but then I'm going to just get into a rant here. And my rant is that the most improved player needs to have some sort of criteria. We need criteria for the voters. And yeah, look, last year, so there is precedent. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the front runner right now for most improved player. He's got odds of plus 170. Ja Morant set a precedent, I think, last year, where you have a guy that was already a star that took a leap into all-star, all-NBA level territory. Shai is doing that this season, and we should acknowledge that and appreciate that. Historically, to me, the most improved player was always someone who obviously made improvement in their game and took a step forward. But generally speaking, it was a player, a younger player, or a veteran player that all of a sudden got in the right system and made a big leap. And I don't know, there's something about someone who's already a star making a jump, where I think if I look at Bane, Markkanen, Halliburton, these guys weren't stars prior to the season. They were really good players, and now all of a sudden they've taken a jump.
But this is my question. We talked about this with Tyrese a little bit last week, but speaking of precedent, the only guy in the last, you know, 10 years who's won this award who hasn't made the playoffs is Brandon Ingram in 1920. But for the most part, it's the person who wins this award is on a good team. They don't need to be a championship team. They're on a good team. Shai's been incredible. I don't think the Thunder are making the playoffs. I'm not sure the Thunder think they're making the playoffs. And so at what point, you know, at what point does, even if he puts up 31, 32 a game, if this is a team that is, you know, fourth in the lottery, does that not make a difference?
I think it will weigh on voters. And again, betting odds and the people that actually vote on these awards are two very different things. When you look at Shai specifically, he had really good efficiency numbers in his third year. There was a pretty significant dip last year in his fourth year, and he's back to those same efficiency numbers that he had in his third year. Now, the difference is the volume is way up. He's decided to take less threes. His 3-point shooting numbers are fine, but really it's the drives. We've all seen him. He's a master at his craft with his footwork and his shot fakes and his change of pace. He can get to the rim and create good offense at will, but he's been doing that for 3 years. And I'm not saying if he ends up averaging 32, 6, and 5 for the season and the Suns or the Thunder are fourth in the lottery, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve the award, but by my definition of what the criteria should be, I think it's more about players making a big jump rather than a player all of a sudden getting more volume, if that makes sense. By the way, Tommy, I agree with you to an extent on the most improved player. I don't necessarily think
that winning takes into a, that voters take into account winning with most improved player. I do think they take into account with the sixth man of the year. And that's where I'm like hesitant. Like I'm looking at the odds right now for Bones Highland. He's at plus 3,500 for sixth man of the year. And we talk about how terrible his 2-point shooting has been, but the guy's shooting 50% from three on six attempts a game. His splits when he's with Jokic on the court are great, just like they were in his rookie year. The problem for him, I think, is that team craters when Jokic is off the floor. Jokic's on-off rating the last two seasons has been insane. And so I think he'll get hurt there. And this is where the odds on favorite Russell Westbrook right now, he's at plus 120 on DraftKings Sportsbook. He's been spectacular off the bench. 9 games, 18 points a game, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, 45% from the field, 41% from 3. He's been so good. The Lakers suck. They're 3-10. They got the third worst record in the NBA. I don't, outside of some spectacular trade, I don't know how all of a sudden they become a play-in team.
We both love Russell. We both have, you know, praised him this year, even with all the craziness. How can you give him this award? Right now the Pelicans with the Lakers pick would be picking first in the NBA draft based on the lottery odds. How can you possibly give him this award? How can you give anyone on that team an award like this based off of their start?
That's a good question right there. That's a good question.
Can I give you a sleeper on the sixth man?
Yeah, I want to hear your sleeper.
I mean, he's our boy, so we're very biased. Kevin Love at plus 4,000. On this list feels like somebody that should be significantly higher based off both his shooting numbers this year and also how that team is. And I know I always harp about them. I'm the Cavs fan all of a sudden, but looking at this list, if we go down the list, this is a guy that has been, and he almost won last year. I think he was second or third in voting last year, but he's only continued just sort of reinventing himself off the bench.
Yeah, I didn't realize that you, as a Chicago sports fan, would all of a sudden become a Cleveland homer. It's a shocking turn of events for me. It really is. It's a shocking turn
of events.
We
do one podcast in Cleveland, and all of a sudden.
I do think, though, Tommy, that the sixth man of the year, if you play on a playoff team and there is considerable measurement of impact to winning, I do think that has an influence on voting, which is one of the reasons Jordan Poole right now at plus 300, he's got the most money bet on him, the most percentage of bets on Jordan Poole. There's two things to think about with Jordan Poole right here. Number one, I think there's a chance he moves into the starting lineup at some point. Klay, has not looked great physically. I think eventually there is that regression to the mean, and he ends up shooting close to 40%, and his numbers go up. But there's a chance he could move into the starting lineup. I know there's some Warriors Twitter fans that are pining for that. But really, for me, he doesn't have an impact on winning right now. He hasn't had an impact, I should say. He hasn't had an impact on winning right now. Their bench units have been really bad. When he's in with the starters, it's not particularly great either. He's a -9 net rating overall per 100 possessions. I have trouble voting for a guy like that. The guy to me right now, he's been out of the lineup, but the guy to me right now is Malcolm Brogdon, who's been really solid. He's got the highest usage percentage of his career, the highest player efficiency rating of his career, and they're the number one team in the East. And he has fit seamlessly with that team, adjusting to newer role, coming off the bench. So I think if there's a chance for Brogdon there, and again, if you're willing to take a flyer on plus 1,200 odds, that's a pretty damn good bet. As always, see the show notes for details. We've got potentially, I don't want to jinx this, Tommy, we've got potentially an all-timer next week. So please pay attention to our social channels. Our plan is to release something a couple days before Thanksgiving. God willing, please let it happen. Please let it happen. Let's get to our conversation. All right, let's welcome in Bones. Bones, thank you so much for doing this, man. It's a real pleasure. Everyone here on our team, Tommy, Jason, Kylie, we're all big fans of you. So this is a real treat for us to have you on the show.
Joe, man, it's a pleasure just to be here, just to know, the amazing career that you had. So just to be a guest on this show, man, is everything to me.
That's awesome. Well, like I said, we appreciate it, man. And I got to get something out of the way. I got to get something out of the way. Tommy's going to be mad that I bring this up, but I bring this up every time.
Yeah.
We have a guest that has the same commonality that I have, and we have something in common, you and I,
yeah,
besides basketball, and that is that well, I'm a retired rapper, but we are both rappers, essentially.
Well, you got to show me a little couple bars, and if you're a rapper, Jaden, so.
Who else in the league, bars-wise, do you respect?
I respect everybody, bars. This is my little brother. Hey. Back up, man.
Hey, what's up?
Damian Lillard, I think James Wiseman actually raps as well too. So that's a lot of guys who I didn't know rap. So it's fun just to see everybody have a different outlet in a space where they, you know, actually be comfortable and be themselves.
I want to give a shout out to Brandon Bass. Brandon Bass was my teammate for a couple of years in Orlando.
Yeah.
He was also a rapper, and he made an amazing music video at his house in Orlando. I encourage everyone. It's got to be on YouTube somewhere. I'll try to tweet out a link, but it's awesome. So we know like the nickname, right? Bones,
yeah.
Busy Bones, and why that is. I believe it's due to your slender build.
Yeah.
But when did people start calling you that? How did that sort of come about?
It happened, you know, when I was a little kid. One of my friends, a close friend of mine, yeah, actually came up with the name for me. And I was actually born in North Carolina, Salisbury, North Carolina. So I moved to Wilmington, Delaware. And I was new coming around, and a lot of people didn't have a nickname for me. So I was a new kid in town, a new kid, you know, of a friend group. So I was going around them, and they didn't have no name for me. And one of the coaches, he called me Carolina. And they like, you know, we like that name for you, but we want our own name for you. So they just came out of nowhere and just called me Bones. And I'm like, man, like that fit me so perfect. And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna stick with this. And another close friend of mine, he came up with the name Busy, and just put two and two together. And it just stuck with me ever since. I had this name since I was like 7, 8 years old. So it stuck with me ever since.
That's your rap name as well? Busy Bones?
Yeah, Busy. Yeah.
Mine,
you know, Busy can stand for so much. So
mine was J-Red. You know, mine was J-Red. So very easy to make that jump.
Yeah.
Busy, I was going to ask about the Wilmington basketball scene in general. Like, what was it like? What was it like competition-wise?
Man, it was really rough. You know, I remember, and I used to tell all my friends, you know, and the older guys, you know, when they asked me about the same thing, it was so hard to get on the floor and on a court. You know, I would go to the gym and I would have a basketball going to the gym, and I would get off of school, go to the gym, and I'm just like really seeing and watching everybody play, and it's like you got to wait your turn. And they that was really something when I was coming up. Like, you had to wait your turn. You couldn't get on the floor if you was, you know, a certain age. It was always the older guys. Like, it was like a, I feel like it was a respect thing. You had to respect the older guys playing ahead of you. And I had no problem with that because I was just learning and, you know, just taking it all in. But for me, it was tough, man, because I just wanted to get out there and play. And I'm a very competitive kid, but just that aspect of not getting out there and being told, nah, you can't play, you can't get on the floor with us, you know, you're not ready yet. You know, hearing those words just makes you want to go much harder each and every day and go to the gym and, you know, study and watch them, you know, as being older than me. And you know, it was really rough for me, man. It was rough. But just growing up, I really had to overcome that and understand, like, I had to wait my turn.
There's a viral video of you actually posted 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I think it has 3.4 million views on YouTube. You playing at the park, one-on-one. I think the title is you destroying two Philly trash talkers.
Yeah.
You actually beat the second guy 7-0. Tell us what happened that night.
All right. So that it's like that league is called a Czech Rock League, but you couldn't see, you know, the league playing. But we was at a league called Czech Rock League. And this was after the game. We was finished playing. So we just chilling on a little stepping stool type of thing. You know, we're just sitting on something. And we just chilling. But it started becoming like a comparison thing. And I really don't get compared, you know, back at home, you know, with other guys and stuff like that. And I was keeping myself out of the conversation. I wasn't hopping no conversation or comparing, you know, this guy to this guy. And man, out of nowhere, you know, one guy just said, yeah, like, I like me better than, you know, Bones and da-da. And I heard it. I'm like, bro, what, bro?
And I don't like them. Like I said, I'm very competitive. So just hearing those words, like, that just makes me instantly just tap into my mode. And I instantly said, man, like, you want to check up? Like, it's a court right there. Like, we could go there and we could check up. And after that, you know, I just feel like it was a pride thing with those two guys. And didn't really want to, you know, come down to their senses and understand that they couldn't do nothing with me. So we went on to the court and And the first guy, that wasn't, I wasn't supposed to be playing him, but I guess he was just a little brave. But, you know, the first guy, I got him out the way. Then the second guy was, I really wanted to play. And I didn't want him to touch the ball or score at all. Like, I wanted him to, you know, feel that and understand, like, for the rest of his life that that video will be on YouTube. And you got 7-0, and I don't ever want you to – I feel like that was a really humbling experience for him, like, to understand, like, bro, you have to be humble sometimes and understand, like, don't compare yourself to nobody or put yourself over nobody, be humble. So, no, I feel like that was a very humbling experience for him. And that's really how I started. And ever since then, I didn't think that video would blow up, but it literally blew up overnight in like 2 nights, man. And ever since then, like, I got to the league, everybody was like, man, that's the kid that, you know, had that video at the park. And just to be remembered after that, you know, because I'm a type of guy, grew up on street ball. So just to be remembered, you know, from people remembering me off of a street ball setting and playing in a street ball setting, that's big for me.
How old were you when this happened? You're 17?
17, yeah. I think, yeah. 17.
So I can't pass this opportunity up to tell one of my favorite stories of my life.
I knew this was coming. This is a good time to tell.
But it's a very, yeah. I didn't have YouTube growing up, unfortunately. But my sophomore year after school was out, I was visiting my girlfriend at the time who lived in Minneapolis, and I went to the Lifetime Fitness. Her little brother rebounded me for like an hour, and I noticed this guy to the side who was watching my workout. And so I get done and he comes over to me and he's like, hey, I know you can shoot, but I don't think you can take me off the dribble. And yeah. I was like, all right, bet. Let's go. Let's play one-on-one. Yeah. And it was the same mindset that you had. I was like, this motherfucker's not going to get the ball. And I beat him 11-0. And I think it's important. Like, I was having this discussion with a dad the other day at my son's game. I think it's important for every hooper who's not going to make the NBA to have that moment where you're like, oh, these guys are on a different level. Yeah,
exactly. For sure. That was my approach when they was, you know, comparing me. Like, bro, we are nowhere near on the same level. Like, and I'm very humble. So I'm like, man, just to keep hearing this in the back of my mind and back of my ear, I'm like, bro, there's no way they keep saying and comparing me to them where they're nowhere near as good as me. You know, I don't even say like how good I am, but like, you know, as I put in so much time and work, I'm not finna let you say that you're better than me in any way, shape, or form. Like, but I just feel like, you know, that was a very like humble experience for them to understand. Like, it's definitely levels to certain things, and like certain people just got to be humble. Literally,
do you feel like people after that happened, whether or not the video going viral or not, do you feel like people stopped testing you?
Honestly, I feel like, because that's something that's very I'm remembered on. Like, they just go back to that video and like, man, that kid's a dog. Like, you know, that kid is this. The kid is this. So it's like, I feel like that's something that a lot of people go to that video and be like, man, like, that's not a kid that you really want to, you know, tick off or, you know, get started. So just to be remembered off of that video, man, it's legendary.
So you're growing up in Wilmington, Delaware. You have you have an unbelievable shot, obviously. Your shooting form, I love, and I want to get into your shooting form a little bit later.
Thank you.
But there's like a herky jerkiness to your game. There's some sauce to your game as well as the shooting. Who were your sort of influences? Who were the guys that you attempted at least to model your game after growing up?
Everybody laugh at this, but hot sauce, man. Hot sauce was number one. Number one. I used to get home, you know, off the school bus, right after school, man, like 4:30 p.m. I used to get off of school and I used to go right to my house. I used to eat a bowl of cereal and I used to turn on Hot Sauce Highlights. And I used to eat my cereal and watch the highlights. And right after I was done eating the cereal, I would put the phone up on something, grab a basketball, go in my mirror and do all of his moves. And then boom, right after that, I'm done. I'll go to the gym and just like practice all his moves, man. That guy is like really an icon to me. That's somebody I really like, you know, was modeling my game after growing up and that I really watched. And that's really the only guy I say like, man, I really watched him every single day and really wanted to be like.
That was not the answer I was expecting. Have you had a coach at any level, whether it was high school, college, Michael Malone? Have you ever had a coach tell you to dial back the street ball?
Nah, man, not at all. Like, they really like love it. Like, it's like they like in high school, my coach would say, you know, just be busy, like get busy. And then as soon as I got to the, you know, to the league, you know, in college it was the same thing, but like as soon as I got to the league, I'm thinking like, okay, like, you know, maybe, you know, they want to set back on things like a little bit of the street ball, like not too much, but like, but as a coach, like you want your players to be comfortable and be themselves. You know, this is what you drafted them for. Like, you don't want them to change. So the first thing my coach told me, like, I'm in love with your game. Like, just go out there and be busy. Like, you don't have, there's no pressure. Don't change. Don't do nothing. Like, go out there and be yourself. And hearing that from a head coach, like, it's like, man, like, it gives you all the confidence in the world. Cause it's like, man, like, I put so much time and dedication to my game. You know, you don't want to hear those words. It's like, a coach telling you how to play or how to do this or how to do that. He's just telling you go out there, be yourself and be comfortable. It's nothing to worry about. And that's literally the words, like, you know, what Coach Malone tells me, you know, with the Nuggets. I'm like, man, that's dope.
I see. I was reading an interview you gave a couple of weeks ago where you're talking about Iverson.
Yeah.
And just, you know, his impact, just watching him growing up and that. Is there something that you just, you know, as you're coming into your own basketball-wise, you took from him from just a swagger standpoint?
Yeah, of course, you know, growing up, everybody watched AI. Everybody took, you know, pages out of his book and wanted to be like AI. You know, the famous crossover that, you know, he bought into the league and just the stamp that he had on the basketball worldwide. So that's really something that I took from AI as far as his swagger and just being himself and coming into the league and not allowing somebody else to tell him how to be. And what to do, and you know, the way he dressed, everything was just himself and just unique. And I feel like he gave hoopers that confidence and that wanted to be, just be yourself. You don't have to be like nobody else. Like, make people adjust to you. You know, you don't have to adjust to nobody else. Like, I feel like that he allowed, you know, a lot of hoopers to have that and confidence. He installed a lot of confidence in a lot of hoopers with that.
I totally agree with you on this. I think his impact goes beyond just what he did on the court, stats, winning. There was something about his swagger, his approach, the fact that he was one of one. And I think you could make an argument, and certainly there were guys before him in the NBA, but you could make an argument, I think, that AI influenced this era of player empowerment and individualization as much as anyone. Kobe as well, of course.
Yeah.
Kobe was a little more polished, a little more buttoned up.
Yeah.
But AI was just AI. And I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, I don't even remember guys having cornrows before AI. And then AI got cornrows and everybody got them.
It was like
tattoos. You know, probably got tattoos because AI. Yeah, man.
Literally.
I can't do cornrows. So,
but nah, man, he made it so comfortable for you as a hooper to just really just be yourself, man. I always think AI because I talk to AI here and there. So just to talk to, you know, one of the greats and just to, man, like just to have a conversation with him, like, man, it's AI, but like this is definitely crazy. But I always give AI his flowers just on that standpoint, man. Like, you set the foundation for hoopers like myself, you know, coming from like almost a similar background as him. And so it's just definitely it's been just a blessing just to be able to be in contact with AI and pick his brain and, you know, understand like, man, like you really set a foundation for young hoopers like myself.
I wanted to ask about the recruiting process for you. You know, there's obviously a lot of guys now that don't come from traditional power conference schools, but you were a fairly highly rated high school recruit. How did you sort of end up at VCU?
So VCU recruited me probably my junior year or sophomore year of high school. I can't remember. It was one of those two, but they was actually like one of the first ones or first schools that was really interested into me. And when I had experienced, you know, a real house fire tragedy, it was like they really like installed that love and really comfort me with a lot of love, man. And I needed that. And I had all the other schools like Michigan, Kansas, you know, like I had big schools, high major schools, but I didn't feel that love from them. And I feel like as an athlete, you should go somewhere where you're loved and where they really genuinely love you for you and not just your basketball talents. You feel what I'm saying? So it's like, that's how I felt like you know, what VCU poured onto me, like it was bigger than just basketball with me. I knew basketball was going to take care of itself for me just from the standpoint I put so much work in. I felt like basketball was not a problem for me. It was more so off the floor and what I was going through. So, you know, VCU, like as soon as that happened, man, they came down, you know, they gave me whatever I needed, you know, as far as helping out with my family, you know, just being there for me, calling me every day, checking on me. I didn't even commit yet. And I'm like, man, like, dang, like they don't have to, you know, be there so much when they got kids that they had to worry about at the school already that committed there. I ain't even committed there. And they showing me 110, you know, support. So that was like a no brain for me. And once I committed there, it was the same love. And when I got on campus, it was the same love. So I'm like, man, nothing changed here. I'm like, man, it's this, and, you know, picking a school, it can make or break you. Cause maybe you get there and you're not playing as much. And you know, every kid dream is to get to the NBA. So if you get there and you're not playing, maybe you transfer. Now scouts looking, oh, maybe is you the problem or is the coaches what's going on? Get to another school, it's not working out. Now you're at the bottom of the barrel. So I'm very thankful for a school like VCU who took me in with open arms and allowed me to be myself and really pour that love onto me. So picking VCU, man, that was like a no-brainer to me. Even though like it was a mid-major school, I felt like it was a high major at the same time.
You brought up the fire, the tragic fire.
Yeah.
That you were in. You were on the second floor, you jumped down, you tore your patella mm-hmm. tendon, your grandmother and two cousins passed away.
Yeah.
And at this point in your life, I know you sort of brought up VCU being your support system. At this point in your life, what was your support system locally day to day when that happened?
Man, everybody. I felt like the world was so in tune with me and wanted to, you know, help me get back on my feet and just be there for me. Cause like I said, I'm a very humble kid. I'm loved by many, you know, my personality is, you know, I give off, you know, much more, so much joy to others. I felt like when that happened, people were like, man, no way that happened to Bones. You know, what can we do? What can we do to help him? What did like, I felt so much love worldwide from just everybody. And I always live by, you do good by people, you always good back. So I felt that love so much from just everybody and just from my city, you know, from other states, from people like I didn't even know, like donating thousands of dollars just so we could get back, you know, try to buy a new home, you know, just little things like that where I'm forever grateful for just to, you know, see people be so, you know, tapped in what was going on with my life. You know, they didn't have to do that. Like I said, they got so much other stuff going on, but it's the fact that take like an hour out of that day, 30 minutes out of that day to see, you know, what's the update on my life, how I'm doing, you know, how I'm recovering. You know, that was everything to me, man. I couldn't ask for nothing better than that. You know, I was at the bottom of the barrel, man. I felt like I was at the, you know, the bottom of the world, man. It was a dark place for me. So just to be loved, you know, from my high school to, you know, the college coaches to my hometown, to old teachers, to, you know, teachers I had first grade, second grade, like, everybody was just reaching out and wanted to, you know, see what was going on with Bones. So that was the biggest moment for me, man, like in my life that I felt really, really like, dang, man, like people really are interested in and just love me, you know, for who I am. So that was big for me.
You know, one of the observations I've had as an outsider, I have been your teammate. You've been in the league 2 years. I'm not particularly close with anybody on the Nuggets, so I'm not getting info on you day to day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as an outsider, you know, one of my observations has always been that you play and act with an infectious joy and spirit. Yeah. There's an energy and enthusiasm. You see that with your teammates. You see that in how you play. You certainly see that in your interactions with the home team fans in Denver. Yep. And it sounds like, because one of my questions was going to be, how does that tragedy not break that spirit? How does that tragedy not break that joy? And so it really was your community sort of uplifting you and supporting you in that moment.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, just not taking anything for granted. I've always been a kid, like, man, I take everything, like, I don't take anything for granted. I'm the type of kid, I appreciate everything. Like if it's something little, you know, if it's something, you know, big, like I always be appreciative of it because at the same time, you know, somebody couldn't, they didn't have to do that for me or, you know, I'm just a very thankful kid. So at that time, I'm just like, man, like why wouldn't I have, you know, a smile on my face? You know, I literally, you know, saw death before my eyes. Like I couldn't have been here. You know, I survived through, you know, a God miracle. So like, man, like just to be on that court and I really want to, when I play, I play with so much joy because I want the next person to if they're going through something, I want them to think like, man, like somebody else been through worse. Or if they're going through something, I can just look at Bones Highland like, man, like that kid been through so much. And he's just smiling out here playing with so much joy. And he's just happy. And he's just, you know, just being himself regardless of what he's been through. Because at the end of the day, somebody else's situation is always worse than yours. So I'm just forever grateful, you know, just to be here and be able to play the sport that I love. Because at the same time, you know, the doctors told me I would have never been able to play basketball again. So I'm just very, you know, grateful. And I don't take these moments at all for granted.
I was going to ask you about that, about the physical recovery. What was that process like?
Emotional, it was a mental aspect. Everything was just hard for me, man. Like just being away from basketball for 7-8 months. And just like battling, you know, the tragedy, but also, you know, dealing with trying to get back and recover my knee and get back on the floor. So just battling those two was very, very hard for me. And if I didn't have friends like around me, like I probably still wouldn't be here to this day again, you know, because I feel like I would have really like been in a really even darker place just to understand, like, just to have to go through that on my own, man, that would have been tough, man. So I really appreciate all my friends that was around me each and every day, and they didn't want to leave me at all by myself. And I'm just very thankful for that as well, too, man. Like this them just to be around me was everything for me. Being around family, close friends, and just everything for me. That was everything.
I don't want to sort of, you know, go down this road of bringing up really, you know, dark feelings with you. And I mm-hmm. apologize for asking this question, but you know, when I hear this story, the real, one of the remarkable things about the story is that decision to jump out of a second story window. Yeah. If I read correctly, I think you landed on a stairwell and that's how you tore your patella tendon. Like in that moment, what's going through your brain?
Mm-hmm. Just everything, man. When I first like tried to peek out the window, you know, when everything was going down and I probably had like a couple more seconds before it was time for me, I felt like I told somebody out there, like, you know, keep come save me. And they said, like, you know, we need you. Like, you're our last hope. Like, we need you, Busy. Like, we need you to jump. Like, you really are our last hope. So I'm like, man, those words like meant everything to me. Like, wow, like my city is really dependent on me to make it and really set the foundation for, you know, a small city that just gets overlooked a lot. And there's nobody who comes out of here and, you know, represents Wilmington, Delaware as it should be rep. So I'm like, man, dog, I really had to, you know, just jump, you know, and do something that I really don't want to do, you know, face my fears. So, man, just jumping out and doing that. I'm like, man, like that made me even more brave as a person, you know, like, I'm not scared of anything. Like I go out and play with so much like fierce and an attitude, and like you can just see like, man, that kid been through some real stuff. So it's like that's just my approach to everything, man. Like I'm just like just hearing those words from the dude, like we need you. That was everything to me. Like that was another reason why I jumped out too.
I mean, it's incredible, and you know, sorry for your loss, and I don't even know where to go from here. To be honest with you, it truly is one of the most remarkable stories that I've ever heard about an NBA player, and it really anyone. And
you're still in touch. You're still in touch with the firefighters, right? Because you had them out to a game last year.
Yeah, I get so like, you know, teary eyed when I see the firefighters. Like when I went back to Philadelphia, and I seen them like. When I went back to the locker room, like this was before the game, like I bawled my eyes out and I'm like, man, like they really like, you know, like came and tried to like rescue, you know, my family, and they rescued my baby brother, you know, from my grandmother covering them. So that when I seen them, like, man, like they really got there so fast and, you know, wanted to take the, like, just do something that a lot of firefighters have to go through and try to, you know, go in there and make sure like try to survive. I mean, try to rescue a lot of, you know, a human. So that was big for me, man, just to see firefighters at the game. And I, like I said, I just got teary eyed before the game. I just really got teary eyed, man. I couldn't take it in. And it was a very emotional moment for me.
If you've been following the pod, you know I'm stepping my suit game up as I'm calling more and more games. So shout out Indochino for getting me all prepared for this home stretch of games.
It's also wedding season, so you can get in on looking great. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into the wedding season looking like $1 million, even though the suits start at just $499. You can either book an appointment at one of their showrooms or do what I did and set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website and choose customizations without even leaving the house. I just ordered a nice plum suit with pinstripes. I'm trying to tap into my inner Walt Frazier, and I think it's working. The entire process was super simple, and the suit fits great. That's the sweet spot. So look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code OLDMAN to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code OLDMAN. If you're like me and appreciate great quality, easy-to-wear clothes in your closet, let me introduce you to Rails. They're a Los Angeles-based brand that blends their California roots with an elevated European aesthetic, and the fabrics feel as good as they look. From super luxe button-downs and essential outerwear to vacation-ready shorts and tees, Rails is consciously crafted for the modern man on the move. With the sun coming out, I recently got myself a few short sleeve button downs, and they are super light and comfortable. Try Rails for yourself at their flagship stores in New York, San Francisco, Boston, London, Paris, and beyond, or at rails.com. And take 15% off your order with the code JJ. That's 15% off with code JJ at rails.com. The NBA action is just getting started, and so are the incredible offers at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can make any $5 NBA pregame moneyline bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins.
And get this. Right now, everyone can earn up to 100% boost with DraftKings stepped-up same-game parlays. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same-game parlay, and combine multiple bets like which team will win, total rebounds, total points scored, and more.
We've been having a lot of fun here at the Old Men and Three with same game parlays. The app is super easy to use. It's super easy to build out your same game parlays. And last week, when we made our announcement about our partnership with DraftKings, they gave us a 100 boost, a 100 boost on a Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, 7 threes or more. And that hit, Tommy, that hit. With payouts bigger than ever, DraftKings Sportsbook is where I go to bet on the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code JJ. Make any $5 bet this week and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code JJ. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
So your sophomore year, your conference player of the year, but again, a non-power conference. What sort of made you confident that it was the right time to leave and declare for the draft?
I was in the right mental state. I felt good about myself. I felt I put so much work in during the season, you know, going back at night, every single night, I had a routine of going back to the gym and working on my craft in the morning before practice. You know, I'm going and working out before practice and working out after practice. So I'm literally like perfecting my craft and trying to perfect my, like, you know, everything that I'm trying to, you know, accomplish. So I felt like I was so comfortable with myself and with my game. I'm like, man, like, this is a no brainer for me. Like, coming off of averaging 20, you know, and I think 4 or something like that. And just being a really prolific scorer and a dominant player, you know, in the A-10 conference, I felt like I put my blueprint on, you know, VCU and I really let people know worldwide, like, I'm ready for this next step. And I had no, like, doubt in my mind that I was ready. Like, I'm not the type of kid that, you know, I'm one step, 1 foot in and 1 foot out. Like, I see a lot of kids, like, when they go into the draft, like, they 1 foot in and 1 foot out. I'm like, bro, you can't do that at anything in life. Like, you will not accomplish anything in life, like, doing that. And I'm like, man, I'm 2 feet in. Like, they asked me, am I testing the waters? I'm like, I took that as disrespect. I'm like, testing the waters? I'm not testing no waters. Like, I'm ready, you know, for the league. This is, I'm ready, literally. And I just really took that as disrespect. But, you know, as an athlete, I feel like you should be doing everything with 2 feet in. And as a friend of mine, he tried to come out last year and he asked me, like, yeah, like, I'm like 1 foot in, 1 foot in and 1 foot out. I don't really know what to do. I'm like, listen, like, if you want to take this step, you got to be literally put your big boy pants on and you got to go full throttle with it. Like, you can't, like, oh, man, like, I don't know what to do. I'm relying on this person. It's literally when you're going through that pre-draft process, it's literally yourself, your thoughts, and you have to prove to everybody why you're a first rounder, why you're this pick, and why you're ready. You can't depend on nobody else, can't depend on your agent. You got to go out there and perform. So I feel like that was I was ready. I had no doubt in my mind. I wanted to prove to the world that I was ready, and I took everything full throttle.
Did you know before draft night that the Nuggets was a possibility?
Nah, man, it's crazy because it's literally 2 weeks before I was supposed to come out here for a draft workout, and I told him no. I had rolled my ankle in the Lakers workout, and I'm like, man, I rolled my ankle. Like, I ain't going to Denver. And the Lakers was the 22nd pick, and my range was like 15 to like 20, 23 or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, man, like it's over for Denver. Like, I ain't going out there. And the Clippers told my agent that they was going to pick me. And I forget what pick they was. I think the Lakers was 20. Well, I don't know. But the Clippers was a high pick, though. And they told me they was going to take me. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to the Clippers, man. It's over with. I ain't going to Denver. I'm not going out to work out. But, man, as soon as that night came, I'm like, whoa, this is crazy, bro. It's no way.
So what was going through your mind, like, on draft night?
A lot of emotions, and I didn't have no doubt in my mind that I wasn't going to be drafted. I knew I was going to get drafted in the first round. I was just like, you know, when will my name be called? You know, but I knew I was the first rounder, though. But it was so much emotions on draft night. That was one of the best, you know, moments of my life. Just to have all close friends, you know, family there. And when I got my name called, I just instantly hugged my mom, and we just dropped and just cried. And just from everything that we've been through in our lifetimes, like, man, like, it's one of those moments, like, just feels so surreal. And, like, it's really hard to put it in words because I still had these flashbacks, you know, hugging my mom and just dropping and just in tears before we got up to celebrate. I'm like, man, like, we did it, like, you know, through everything, like, literally been through, you know, hell and back. So it's like, man, this is a surreal moment for me.
Lakers had the 22nd pick. Clippers had the 25th pick. They traded Quentin Grimes to New York.
So
you get to Denver. What are your first impressions of Nikola Jokic?
Before I got there, I didn't have no impression on or try to think like how he is. I was just like, okay, let me just go see how he is in person. And when I first seen him, I'm like, bro, it don't even feel real. Like this is how Jokic act, like, you know, coming off of being an MVP. So like, dang, like this guy is very humble. Like, he doesn't want to talk about no accolades. Like, it's just straight work and it ain't nothing else. Like, it's all about team and winning and everything else. All the accolades is just like, I'm not saying like he don't care about it, but he don't speak about it. He don't want to talk about it. Like, it's just, okay, just throw it to the side. I just want to win a championship and multiple championships. That's really just his day-to-day approach. And I'm like, man, like, just to have a teammate like that. And like, man, because that's something that that's a dream of mine. I want to accomplish that as well, too. So just to see that from him, like, man, like, that's a very humble guy. I'm a humble guy myself. So just look at Jokic, like, man, you want somebody like that leading your franchise, you know, and like, man, like, you can look at Jokic and be like, man, Jokic doing it. Jokic back-to-back MVP. You know, he's a very humble guy. And that's something that a kid can look up to.
Yeah, I would argue that he is, Tommy, the most unassuming NBA superstar potentially of all time. Like, I would probably throw Tim Duncan in that as well. Timmy was like that. So I did y'all's game a couple weeks ago in Denver against the Lakers.
Yeah.
And I went with the ESPN crew to STK afterwards.
Yeah.
And the staff was like, oh, Jokic is coming in tonight. Jokic is coming in. So he rolls in with his brothers, of course. And he comes over and says hi to our table. He comes over to me and he's like, yo, I didn't even know you were doing ESPN. You know, I'm not on social media. Yeah. I don't really know anything. That's awesome. He's like, I know you have the podcast. And I had to shoot my shot. So I'm like, you're welcome on the show anytime. I know you probably would never do it. And he's like, yeah, you're right. I'd never do it.
That's really him, yo. He don't want to do anything regarding no thing that's going to be on social media. Man. He does not have zero. He has zero interest in that.
Think about this. This guy has won two MVPs. I just looked it up today. He's number one almost every advanced stat. Like, so Raptor, 538's advanced stat, like all encompassing advanced stat. He's number one in the league again this year.
Yep.
This dude is like the best or one of the best NBA players in the world. And all we know about him is that he likes horses. Like, that's all we know about him.
You don't know anything. I'm his teammate. That's all I know. I'm his teammate, bro. That's all I know is that he likes horses. You know, he's just on his phone and he's watching horses all day. Like, it's literally all you will know about him. Like, his private life, you won't know. Like, nothing. Like, I was recently just on a flight with his wife. And I'm like, wait, that's Yoke's wife. And I was under weather, so I didn't want to go over there. She had a baby. I didn't want to, you know, go over there and talk to them and get something to them. You know, they have a newborn. So I'm like, man, this is, you know, they come back on a flight. Like, just to see how, you know, private they are. That's something that you would look forward to or look up to as well, too, just to see how off the grid they are, you know?
Was there a particular play, maybe a pass or something like that when you first got to Denver where you're like, oh, yeah, this dude is just different?
Yeah, the one in and I think it was against the Spurs. It was a pick and roll play, came off, they hit him in the pocket. No, they lofted the ball over. He knew the guy was coming over and just smacked it. He didn't even look at AG. He just smacked it and he didn't even look at him. AG caught it and just dunked it. I'm like, bro, like, how did you know he was just there and you just tipped the ball? Like, it was a volleyball. Bro, that was like one of the craziest pads I ever seen in my life. He didn't even look at it. It's literally like he lofted it and he just tapped it and it went to AG and banged it. I'm like, man, that's insane, bro. Crazy.
He has some crazy highlight passes, but there is something, maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you'll push back on it. There's something that's very ho-hum about his game, partially because of just how he moves. You know, he just kind of moves at his own speed and his own cadence. But I get into an argument all the time with my 8-year-old son, Knox, because we'll ask him, you know, who's your favorite players? And he'll say Steph, Luka.
Yeah.
And one day he said to me, you know who my least favorite player is? And I was like, no, he's like, Jokic. I'm like, Jokic? Why? Why is Jokic your least favorite player? And he says, well, he doesn't have any good YouTube highlights. That's what he told me. And I'm like, what YouTube highlights are you watching, bro? Because the game I was doing against y'all, he had this ridiculous one-legged step back from the top of the key.
Yes,
I was just like, that's sick. That's sick.
That's like, an highlight. I think it's because it's not so flashy. It's not like, he got a real old school slow game, like a lot of people. And that's why I feel like he don't get a lot of press in the NBA, because like, I feel like they think, oh, it's not going to bring back revenue or it's not going to bring back this. And, you know, so I feel like they don't cover him as much, just the fact on like, he's not an exciting player. But when you really watch him, where he's doing some exciting things though, you just really have to watch the game, you know? So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think that brings up a good point. And there's an element, not only for casual NBA fans, but there's an element for even Twitter diehards where I think we sort of take him for granted. As a teammate, night to night, do you ever find yourself taking what he does for granted?
Nah, not at all. Like, I take pages out of his book as far as routine and trying to like, because last year I was struggling as far as like trying to figure out a routine and understand, like, this is a long season. You have to have a routine in the NBA. You just can't just go with the flow and try to, like, figure it out on the way. That you will get lost in the sauce. And I was finding myself lost for, like, 5-6 games. I'm like, man, like, I got to figure out a routine. And one game after one game, I'm like, man, like, I just literally just watched Jokic. And I'm like, man, let me see what he does. You know, so he just did his whole routine, whether it's a win or a loss. I'm like, man, like, that's really allowing him to, you know, prevent poor performance, you know, whether we lose or we win. Like, he's literally preventing poor performance due to our routine and following that routine every day and being disciplined to and understanding, like, man, like, I have to do this routine to, you know, prevent injury or prevent this, prevent that. So I follow his routine, not like follow his, but like, I follow, like, man, I got to get my own routine and figure out what works for me. And I found it. And I'm like, man, I start to see my game just elevate and rise. So that's something that I definitely took a page out of your book for sure.
Speaking of taking it for granted, and JJ, I'm curious your opinion on this too, just for the fans listening, as shooters, as a shooter who plays with them, as a shooter who's played with a lot of good passing bigs, can you explain how his game optimizes the skill set of shooters in a particular way? Because I do feel like it's something you guys in particular might notice rather than sort of people who are not taking advantage of it as much.
I feel like, so you're saying like reword it for me.
He's such an incredible passer. And yeah. like Luke is like this, LeBron's like, he's such an incredible passer that he has the ability to create open looks in a way that, you know, other guys might not be able to.
Yeah, for sure. Just the fact that he just generates so much attention on the court. Like, I feel like if you in the corner, you know, like, if he gets the ball in a certain spot on the floor, you know the pass is coming. Like he's just whipping to the corner out of nowhere, but you know to have your hand ready. So just playing with a guy like that, that can make those passes, I feel like average, like, not even the average NBA player, because it's superstars in the NBA right now that can't make those passes, and you'll be in the corner wide open. So that's something that I don't take for granted, just playing with Jokic, because, like, he's literally finding you, you know, when, you know, a lot of other guys, like, in the league, if you're playing with somebody else, they won't find you being in the corner, deep corner, like that. Like, it's just so much attention that he's generating. Like, you have to be ready to, you know, knock down a shot.
OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like, every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
And I feel like you can get easily 8 to 10 points just by being in the game, you know, for that little spurt of time with him. Just being in the game with him and just being ready to shoot the ball. So that's something that I don't take for granted, you know, playing on a team with Jokic.
Yeah, I think it's the timing of the passes. Like, he's never a beat late, and he can sort of anticipate that help defender leaning the wrong way. So his movement's coming into the paint. And as soon as he sees that, the ball's on a zip line right to you, you know, on time, on target. Right. Those are the best passes if you're a shooter, on time, on target. Yep. Actually, in 2019, when I was a free agent, it became sort of clear that Philly was not going to give me a real contract offer. And so I was sort of looking at other options, and Denver was an option. It was for the full mid-level on a 2-year deal, and I really wanted a third year. And, but like that was the reason. I mean, I was like, I could go play with Jokic, and for me, somebody who moves without the ball, and cuts a lot, or I did cut a lot. I can't cut anymore, but I did cut a lot. Like, I just envisioned, like, oh, I'm gonna get 2 wide open threes and 2 layups every game without even having to, like, create. Dude, I just got to move
at all. And I feel like, you know, just like on an aspect where I said, like, it's, you literally get 8 to 10 points just be being in a game with him, just in literally a 4-minute spurt. Like, you literally could get 8 to 10 points just by just being ready, moving without the ball, you know, cutting, setting the screen for him, and then, you know, rolling to the basket. He just dime you easy. He had a wild layup. So that's just playing with him and understanding how he plays and also like generate my own flair, you know, in that, I'm like, dang, man, I like definitely got something for sure. Like as far as the team, like, man, he got something. Like it's just so much dynamic scores and also a guy like Yoke that can pass like that. Yeah, it's definitely trouble.
You mentioned figuring out a routine. I noticed as I got later in my career, my routine was so important to me, and it was something that I tried to help young guys with as they sort of entered the NBA and were figuring things out. I would preach that to them. Outside of that, what were some of the other early adjustments that you felt like you had to make to the NBA, whether that was on the court or off the court?
On the court, remember this, I don't know if it was the first game I checked in or it was like as the season was going on for the first couple games. I checked in and I was like, I think I was like low man and I had to sprint out to like contest a shot. And just to see how fast like NBA players just rip the ball and go was just insane to me. I'm like, bro, they moving mad fast, bro. Like you really have to be on like, you know, your P's and Q's and you're closing out. You know, everybody's so quick and they got a quick like first step. So that's something I had to understand and get used to, like understand how to close out on, you know, NBA players, because like you can't, everybody in the league can shoot a three ball. Like you can't like underestimate somebody from shooting three. Everybody can make a three. So, you know, you have to close out proper. You know, you got to run guys off, you got to chase guys. So that's something that I had to adjust to very fast, because like, you know, you get blown by off of, you know, swing opportunities too. So that's something I really had to adjust to fast.
I do think that the speed with you have to process information, that's the hardest part as a young player. I know it was for me. And even coming back from an injury, you know, if you sit out for 2-3 weeks, by the end of that second week, I'd be watching the game and I'd be like, wow, like, this is happening so fast. And then that adjustment period coming back where your brain and your body sort of have to catch up and be on the same page. That's a real struggle for young guys. Was there a player your rookie year that you guarded that you were just like, oh, this dude is different. This guy is different.
Like I had to guard Kyrie in transition one time and just you know, he's just coming at you downhill full speed, man. I'm like, oh, it's like he had you on your toes the whole time. And like, I try to like fake out and reach at him one way. And he just reacted so fast and like, euro me and just for the layup. And it was and one. I'm like, yeah, like, dude, Cole, man. That like, not a lot of guys are really good in transition and have that quick react time, you know? So, and I'm that type of guy that has that, you know, quick react time. So when he did it, I'm like, man, this guy cold, man. He definitely cold. So just to guard Kyrie in that aspect. And also guys like Steph too, like you take your eyes off him one moment, he's already shooting the ball. So it's like you got to be on point, you know, for a lot of things like that. You know, Trae Young, how quick he is, you know, just to change direction when coming off the screen, how dynamic he can be. So, you know, guys like that too. Ja too, how, you know, shifty and, you know, crafty he is as well. So a lot of guys like that.
I was going to ask you about the game 4 experience against the Warriors. What was that? Can you walk us through what your emotions were like? You know, you're going to have a lot of big games in your career, but like this was sort of one that felt like it was putting you on the map a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I knew I was due for a moment like that in a game like that on the biggest stage, you know, of my life in this series. And I don't know if it was the day before or it was like a couple hours before the game. Like I was just telling myself like, yo, this the game, man. Like I'm finna go crazy. Like this the game. And man, like when the first shot I had shot, it had hit the back iron and it came off. I'm like, man, and I don't get discouraged off of missed shots. I know I'm a great shooter. So I'm like, I know I'm about to still go off. So literally right after that, I come down, I hit a bomb. I'm like, oh yeah, it's on now. So I hit one, I come back down, I get my rhythm now. I do a couple in-between rhythm shots. I'm like, yeah, that one dropped. So boom, they had missed. So I'm like, yeah, it's on. I'm already light the whole arena on fire now. So they missed. I'm like, they already know I'm not passing. My teammates know I'm not passing. So I get the ball, like I come down. I'm like, yeah, this is a heat check for me. I'm letting this go. I let it go. Man, that was like one of the best moments of my life, man. That moment was insane. I got that picture on my wall when I run into the fans. I smack in the hand. I got a picture in my bedroom. I always look at that picture like, man, this is a playoff moment for me. You know, just to watch playoff basketball when I was little. I'm actually in the playoff game, and, you know, I helped my team win the game. So that was big, man.
Did you notice a difference between, like, And if you did, what was that difference? The difference between regular season NBA versus playoff NBA. And
yeah,
again, you guys played the eventual champions, so yeah, it was a hard task.
Yeah, for sure. The difference is the atmosphere and how electric each time you have the ball, you have to, like, you have to value it. Like, you have to limit all the turnovers. You have to value every possession you got. And especially a team like the Warriors, like, you got to value all your possessions. Because I remember a game, and we lost. We was up, like, I believe 13. I don't think in the fourth quarter, they just bombed us away and came all the way back and won at home. We were supposed to win that game. So just to be valuing every possession is big, man. Just to, like, understand how electric games are in playoffs. Like, one spurt can change the whole game, and you lost all your momentum. Now the whole crowd is into it, because now this is, like, it's like do or die moments, you know? Everybody's into it. Everybody's looking at every single play. You know, so that like, the electric of playoff basketball is the most, like, interesting thing about playoff basketball.
I talked earlier about your shooting form, which is something I want to discuss in 1 second. But I do want to ask you how much shit you get for the fact that you're shooting 50% from three on almost 6 attempts a game, but you're shooting 27% from two.
Yeah.
And again, last year that wasn't the case. You shot a fine percentage of two. Like, what's going on there? What's going on?
You know, it's crazy. Like, so I'll get in the lane, and I'm a really good finisher. So, like, when I'm getting in the lane, or I'm, like, shooting my middies, like, I just feel like sometimes it come off a little hard, and I'm like, man, like, why? I shoot so much of them. I work on my game so much. Like, bro, why is it coming out so hard? When I get in the lane, I, like, get my pass to my defender. I get the ball on the backboard, but it just to come off. I'm like, man, like, I'm getting into the lane whenever I want, get to the basket whenever I want. It's just like, man, it ain't dropping. So, like, I'm like, all right, got to deal with it, man. But one thing, like, for me, like, I always know, like, my numbers always rise, though. Like, I'm not the type of kid that, like, gets so discouraged or down on myself, you know, because I know how much work that I put in. Like, and I'm not the type of guy that lives off of numbers. Like, numbers don't make me, you know. I just love basketball so much. I'm going out there playing and having fun, you know. But, you know, I feel like now it's a numbers game, you know, so everybody's so much in tune to it. But for me, I'm not the type of kid, like, I'm so, like, satisfied on the numbers. You know, I'm just having fun, you know, going out there and just being myself. But at the same time, you know, a lot of, you know, numbers are, you know, what a lot of guys get paid off of. So, you know, I feel like, but at the same time, for me, don't make me, you know. But I know, like, my numbers are rise, you know, and that two point field goal percentage, though. Cause I definitely seen that, though, the other day. I'm not going to lie, dude. I seen that. I'm like, dang, bro, that low? Like, I'm shooting that low of 2% is no way. But I'm like, yeah, that'll go up, though. Just 4 games in a row, you 6-for-10 from the field, that'll just skyrocket. It's easy, you know, but.
Yeah, my last year playing on one leg, I think I shot under 40% from two. I wasn't proud of that. I think I shot 39 for the season. I wasn't proud of it.
You know, as shooters and ball players that we are, like, man, that ain't me right there. Like, we know that ain't us. So it's like, you just throw that on the bridge, you know, I'm going to fix that easy. So
your form, we discussed this with Trae Young. We discussed this with Bradley Beal. And you're one of the guys that fits into the camp of having a lower release. And mm-hmm. by and large, especially from three, you shoot on the way up. And my theory on that is essentially it allows you to sort of extend your range. And you were shooting NBA threes way before you got to the NBA. You were shooting from 8 feet behind the line in college. When did you start developing that range? Whether that was high school, middle school, because it really is a very unique aspect of your game.
So I was a little kid. My cousin Tink, he used to always, like, put me through this one drill where it's, like, all around the world, but I had to make a certain amount in a row to move on to the next spot. And he had me doing this every single day, man. And it was one day where I was really frustrated because I couldn't make, you know, as much as I wanted in a row. And but he has been going around all around the free throw line, you know, in the 3-point line. But then, like, I move out close, like, deeper, and he had me shooting out there farther. And that was very comfortable at a young age. I had more of, like, a push shot like that, but it was still, like, accurate. Like, I was making a lot of shots like that. And then I had to do, like, a real transition drill and make a certain amount in a row in a certain amount of time. And I couldn't leave the gym till I did it. So just to be put through those drills at a young age, I feel like that helped my muscle memory at a young age and allowed me to be comfortable shooting that far and have that confidence just to, you know, shoot, willing to shoot those bombs. And it's so easy. I feel like it's so easier to shoot farther for me than on the line. Like, I feel like when a lot of people ask me, like, if you see me shooting a line, you'll see me barely, like, put any momentum to it because it's like, it felt like almost like a free throw. Like, it's just so easy. But when I'm out far, I'm much more comfortable.
Busy. We have a lot of younger kids who watch the show and listen to the show, watch the show. You have such an amazing story, and we're grateful for you telling it to us. Do you have any advice to kids in middle school, high school who watch the show about just sort of like some of the lessons you've learned in terms of persevering to get to this point?
Oh, yeah, of course. My main thing that I live by is never let somebody else's career dictate your career, or, you know, never let somebody else say so, affect you as a person or as an athlete. Just because they saying this about you, that don't mean that that's true, or you have to, you know, agree on it, and that it makes you, you know, you, everybody's their own person. You don't have to, you know, I'm not saying you don't listen to nobody else, but you know when somebody's trying to BS you and just, you know, trying to get over on you or tell you the false information. And as, you know, athletes in this world, when you're trying to make it to the highest level, you have to have a tunnel vision. Like, you just can't allow anybody to come in your ear and tell you this and tell you this and tell you that. You got to know yourself. You got to be comfortable with yourself and understand, like, okay, I'm me. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to let somebody else tell me some BS. And I feel like, he's right. He's, man, like, dang, like, now you're losing yourself as a player now. Now you're not even comfortable with yourself no more. So that was me when I was growing up. I never let somebody else tell me, you know, what I can be and what I'm not going to be, you know? So I feel like that was just my approach all the time. I knew what I wanted to be, and I know I'm going to accomplish, you know, that goal regardless of, you know, what somebody else had to say about me.
That's great advice. And you've been a great guest. You're welcome back anytime, by the way.
We'll
have you on the show, whatever you want. We appreciate it, bro. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
If you like The Old Man and the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Yo, Trey.
Kevin, what's up, man?
You know, I've been thinking, what would have happened if the NBA never vetoes the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and we get CP3 in the same backcourt as Kobe in LA?
Well, you get a very happy Jack Nicholson, for sure.
And the Lakers probably win a bunch more championships. CP3 finally gets a ring or two or three, and the Kardashian empire is forever altered.
What did you just say? Hey, everybody, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier, and we're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.